It's Friday, June 1st, 2017. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. I'm Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker-in-chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Trump pulls out from Paris climate agreement. Silicon Valley comes out strong against the decision. While the Trump organization indulges in right-wing climate conspiracy insanity, will exiting the Paris Agreement lead to a more muscular movement? Apparently, the Weather Channel is all in. And just like that, ExxonMobil shareholders forced the company to disclose the cost of climate change. And after Trump's announcement, activists flooded the White House in an emergency protest. Hurricane season begins, and there is no one in charge of FEMA or NOAA. A week after a Portland, Oregon white supremacist, Jeremy Joseph Christian, killed two men and seriously wounded a third after the men intervened to stop Christian from berating two women of color with racist hate speech, how will communities respond? Washington State Trump campaign operative rewards right-wing free speech warrior. Yes, that's right, a free speech warrior just like Jeremy Joseph Christian. He got rewarded with a portrait of Trump for his handiwork during the violent clashes at Berkeley back in April. And have you seen this one? Yes, there's nooses appearing around Washington, D.C., including outside the Smithsonian African American History Museum. Will we see more pundits now telling us to ignore them and they'll go away? Or will we be the force that will push back the ugly growth of fascism in this country? Time will tell. Maybe we should take some advice from Timothy Snyder's new book, On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century. The March on Truth is happening across the country on Saturday, calling for independent investigations of Trump and his campaign's ties to Russia. Our own Sean Kitchen will be featured in the March for Truth in Harrisburg. Rick Smith will be in New York City. More than 200 Inauguration Day anti-Trump protesters are still facing up to 80-year prison terms. And more than 130 of those arrested have joined a points of unity agreement to reject plea deals requiring them to sell out their fellow activists. We've talked about this again on the show, and just this past week, Al Jazeera ran an extensive piece on this. It's pretty ugly, folks. In Pennsylvania, it's budget season. Monday will be a day of action in the state capitol. Legislators have returned to Harrisburg on Monday to face another contentious session ahead of the June 30th budget deadline. Activists will be filling the rotunda and the capitol steps beginning Monday morning, and both Sean and I will be there. For more details, go to pachoice.org/budget action. So-called Republican moderate Charlie Dent says he'll welcome the journalist assaulting freshman congressman from Montana, Greg Gianforte. Dent sticks his head in the sand saying, "We don't know all the facts. We only heard the audio," about Gianforte's assault on Guardian reporter Ben Jacobs. And Philly Beer Week starts today. It's always sunny side up in Philadelphia. That's right, Pizza Boy will be there in Philly this week. And summertime convinces Sean and Kevin to get active, to break out of Trump fatigue. And I'm just give a little shout out to Blooming Glen Farms to launch off the summer season of CSA organic food that is just kind of was my whole day yesterday. It was really awesome. For a reminder to tune into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. I'll be there once again giving the weekly resistance report. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org, or you can tune in on Dish Network, DirecTV, or if you got Roku, get that Free Speech TV app and listen to it there. If you missed the show, don't worry. You can go to the ricksmithshow.com and click on the free speech icon in the sidebar. As always, we got to remind you, we need you to keep the work we do going. We need you to help keep Pull No Punches Progressive Media going strong. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month, folks. Simply go to ragingchickenpress.org and look for the support and membership tab. Click Become a Member and you're on your way. Not ready to become a member? No problem. You can make a one-time donation by clicking donate. We need you, the progressive community, to help us deepen Pull No Punches, progressive media that will hold power accountable and that will help shine the lights on our movements, right? Our vision of this future. Also, we want to remind folks, for a limited time, Goldstein Media, Seth Goldstein, he's our tech guy right here at Raging Chicken Press. You've seen some of his articles there too as well. Seth is offering a special through his company, Goldstein Media, $50 off an SEO audit. SEO, if you're not familiar with that, is search engine optimization. So if you've got your own web page, you're looking to get more traffic, you want to find out what are the best practices that you can do, some tweaks on your site and so on, this is what you want to do. Seth is offering $50 off SEO audits for a limited time. The offer ends on June 16th, so enact now. Because remember, creating a website, that's only the beginning of your digital marketing outreach, the only beginning of kind of getting your word out there. You also want to be found in search engines. And this kind of SEO audit can help you out a lot. Right. So for $50 off, that's $350 instead of a $400 audit. Right. Basically, what that'll do, you'll get a customized report showing your SEO performance and mobile responsiveness and grades and more. And plus, you will get a 30-minute one-on-one call or meeting to discuss the results and suggestions with Seth. And I'll tell you, he's fantastic to work with. He's helped us out tremendously here at Raging Chicken Press. So if this is the kind of stuff you're looking for, please check it out. You can get in touch with Seth at 215-315-7932, or you can email him at seoaudits@goldsteinmedia.com, and we'll put a link down there in the show notes. Give him a call, check it out, and see what he can do for you. Again, that special $50 off his normal fee for SEO audits runs through June 16th. Okay, so Sean, bye-bye Paris Agreement, huh?
Yeah, at least it's summertime, you know. It's getting warmer out and hurricane season's here. And, you know, no one's in charge of NOAA or FEMA and, you know.
That to me is insane. That to me is like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, because like June 1st, right? That's the official launch, right, of hurricane season?
Officials are hurricane season. You know, I'm actually hoping that they make it to letter S this year, because there will be a Hurricane Sean, and it's spelled S-E-A-N, just like myself. So hopefully Hurricane Sean is here as like a Category 5 hurricane. I can just like post it up as my profile picture on Facebook or Instagram and stuff like that.
Well, I'm glad you're hoping that thousands and thousands of people will have their lives destroyed just so you can have a better profile picture.
Well, I mean, it is irony. I mean, you know, the people who are usually affected by climate change voted for this man. And, you know, if there's no one in charge at FEMA or NOAA, you know, they got their wish. They're getting their wish of, you know, basically destroying any entity of government. I mean, I don't think like anyone's like really talked about this, especially from the national media or the mainstream media. You know, Donald Trump is fulfilling the Republicans' like wet dream of just destroying federal government to anything possible. Like, you name it, they are just not filling positions that need to be filled. And these are positions that, you know, keep people alive pretty much, you know, like, I don't know, NOAA, and keeps the hurricane forecast from the National Weather Service or FEMA, you know, like it's like doing that type of stuff, and doing, you know, pulling out of the Paris climate. It reminds me of Joe Biden's DNC speech, you know, like of how he took that patriotic rhetoric and basically applied it. No, this is what government does for you, like, right, type of thing. Like, you need to invest in your own government. You know, it reminds me like what Kennedy said, you know, like those speeches about Kennedy. But it's, you know, it's really like we're taking a step back in this in the world. You know, we're allowing our adversaries to move ahead of us. You know, I don't agree with like trade agreements like the TPP or stuff like that, but you know, we're allowing China and Russia to really take the lead on issues that where we should be growing as an economy. Like, we're missing out on economic growth at this point, like with renewable resources and believing in climate change. You know, it's truly astonishing.
Well, I got to say, you know, I a few things about what you said is that one, it's like, you're right. I mean, number one about the economic growth stuff is that we're just huge missing. And this is exactly why you saw after Trump's announcement, you had all these people just bail on Trump. I remember that Elon Musk got a whole lot of crap for joining Trump's, what was it, like his business
economic council,
right? For joining that, right? And his justification was, you know, well, you know, I'd rather be part of the conversation and be, you know, to be able to push things in that particular way. And, you know, anytime I hear that from some kind of corporate CEO, even someone who's been doing as much for renewable energy as Elon Musk and that company, I'm just like, yeah, whatever. Year after year, you're your bottom dollar. But to his credit, he was one of the first to come out and basically say, I am off this council and Trump is going in the wrong direction. And then we saw basically right after that, we saw people from Apple, from GE, from a whole bunch of Silicon Valley firms, both people who were on that council and just kind of, you know, major industries or emergent industries or kind of 21st century industries say that, you know, just chastising Trump for what he's doing and kind of pulling away. And in some ways, I think that's look, I don't think it's going to have any effect on Trump. Right. And I think that any belief that, oh, this is actually going to do that. No, but maybe that is it's going to be enough to reorient some of these corporations and these people that are a little bit more progressive in terms of their investments in renewables to say just to double down on renewables kind of moving forward, because nothing is going to come from this government.
And one of the things it's like what we're witnessing is the, you know, like this action. And like what California's response has been, you know, we are witnessing, I think, like the ripping apart of this country.
I agree.
I mean, like, you know, a California exit from this country, secession from this country, you know, might have seemed like a joke this time last year if Trump became president. But I mean, with the steps that they're taking, saying, no, we'll start our own space program, we'll invest in climate science, we'll invest in science, we'll further the research, you know, these are the start. This is like the makings of an independent nation, like, you know, within our own country. You know, we're watching states take steps like New York, you know, going for single payer healthcare in response to Trump. Yes, this is what this is going to do is it's going to force people to sit back. Like, you know, do I want to live in Pennsylvania? You know, a country right. that's overtaken by or a state that's overtaken by conservatives and it's just pulling us down, doesn't care about the people, doesn't care about social safety nets. Or do I want to make that investment and move to California, move to New York State, move to states that you don't actually give a damn about their people? I mean, like the things, the implications that this might have is like mass migration patterns, you know, not night like the, you know, when the African Americans were moving out of the South into northern cities.
No, I
like
agree.
This is, I mean, not on race, like this issue is like should not on race, but I mean, we might start seeing economic migrations into states like California, New York, you know, more progressive states that give a damn about their people and also give a damn about the future of the planet.
No, I think that's right. I think what's actually, I was thinking a little bit about this earlier, like earlier in the week. I was, you know, you see what they're doing in California and New York and some of the kind of the bigger states. For so long, we've had this idea that, you know, that because of the dominance of right-wing media, right-wing ideology about states' rights and all this kind of stuff, a lot of the smaller states, right, conservative states, ones that just so happen are like the largest recipients of federal funds, right? Because they're a lot of them are the poorer states, right? They've been the beneficiary of this whole idea about states' rights and so on, right? Republicans have used that as a way as kind of a bulwark against more progressive federal stuff. And I think that because Democrats, right, primarily have wanted to play within the rules. So they're looking, how do I jockey for a position? You know, how do I use my representation as in Washington? How do I lobby for these positions? Because they're playing by the way, the rules of the game, so to speak. I think what's happening right now is places like California and New York, especially, right, because there are huge population centers, are basically saying, oh, they're not playing by the rules anymore. This is about power politics. Well, guess what? We can play too. Right. It's almost, you know, like, it's almost this idea about saying like this, like, look, instead of saying behind the scenes, we are the economic drivers of this country, or recognizing the fact that people have been talking about for decades now, that we're already seeing migrations towards cities and away from rural areas, right? But whether that's good or bad, I'm not saying one thing, but that's just a demographic fact, right? Those things are happening. These folks trying to say, you know what? Maybe it's about time we started exercising our power, because frankly, they can have a disproportionate impact on everything else in this country. Now, the extreme end of that is kind of what you're talking about, right? Is if there's federal pushback, or they want to go to war, they want to go to war with California, figuratively, that can lead in some pretty crazy directions.
I mean, like California, if they wanted to, can leave this country and succeed as an independent, standalone, state. I mean, they have the sixth largest economy in the world. They have the technology sector there. You know, like, the economy is already there for them to do that, like, if they wanted to. I mean, like, that's the type of stuff, like, not saying it's going to happen, but, I mean, like, it seems like every day what we see with Brexit, the Scottish national movement, the Free Scotland movement, mm-hmm. You're starting to see the ripping apart of parts of Europe, with the Brexit, if Scotland leaves, you're going to see the ripping apart of the United Kingdom. that's a very real possibility. Like, imagine I actually am to the point where I could start seeing that stuff happening here in this country. I could see California seceding from the nation, because we're going to take our ball. It's not like we're going to take our ball and go home, or we're going to take our money and go home. No, we'll stop paying our federal taxes.
No, right. I hear you.
You in Nebraska want to be a big welfare recipient? Yeah. Well, guess what? You're going to lose a lot of money, because we're going to stop paying our federal taxes.
No, I mean, look, there's a lot of stuff that can happen, and that are short of like secession, right? I mean, because sometimes when people hear like this idea about, will California secede, it gets us to this point that's down, like in the future about is that going to happen or not? But just as you just pointed out there with their taxes and stuff, there's also tons of moves that they can make along this way that are in that kind of direction. Whether or not we ever get to real questions about secession, I know there's already people calling for that, right? And there's some economic indicators, like you're saying, that they could say they've got the economy in order to do this. I think it's a little bit more complicated than that when you start thinking about, well, what are the things that how much California is tied into the U.S. economy and all that kind of stuff, but we can not get into that. I see that. The other thing that is interesting to me too, and it's not just, this is where I look at bigger than California. If you look at the whole West Coast right now, and I was reading this, this article popped up and I was kind of reading, I thought it was really interesting. They're talking about something, they started talking about in Oregon, but this is also going to happen now in Northern California and the wine industry. Right. Is that so in Oregon right now, you basically have, Oregon's got a pretty robust kind of wine industry too, as well. It's nowhere near as that of California, obviously, but at least grape growing and also a vineyard, their vineyards and also their production. And what some of those folks are doing there in Oregon is that they're basically diversifying their crop, and they're starting to kind of grow marijuana. Right. Because it's legalized, it's legalized in Oregon. Right. But right now they have to do these things. They have to be very careful, because since it's still a Schedule I drug under federal policy, right, they have to keep these operations completely separate. Right. So they have to have separate bookkeeping and all that. Otherwise, they risk losing their license to actually to come on a bottle of wine. Right. I mean, it's going to be pretty significant. So but that's going on, and it's growing right now. It's just really interesting. There's some discussion, these like family or like vineyards that have been around. Some in some cases, a few decades, some that are kind of more recent, but they're diversifying their crops in this way. And when recreational marijuana becomes legal in California soon, right, there's already those vineyards that are already positioned to do the same, right? Now, so you put that in context with what Jeff Sessions says he's going to do, right? And what the Trump administration is going to do is they're now going to crack down on those states that are, quote unquote, violating federal policy by legalizing or decriminalizing at least marijuana. What's going to be the response from those states, right? This is going to be, if Jeff Sessions is serious about that, and he starts basically saying you can no longer do this, right? Marijuana is not a fringe issue in that area anymore, right? It is kind of integrated now within the economy, right? And it's a long fought
victory. It's not even a fringe issue. it's not even a fringe issue in Pennsylvania anymore. I mean,
No, exactly.
I mean, now like 60% of the state supports full out legalization of marijuana. I mean, exactly. These dominoes are falling quickly, but we're holding on to that, like, you know, 1950s, 1960s mentality.
No, exactly. And so I really think that, you know, you look at that and there's California, then you think about the whole West Coast, and then you look at what New York is doing with education, right? You look at even what Oregon did with education. You know, got a free access to higher education, right? Well, with caveats, of course, like this, because it's freaking Cuomo up there, but still, like, free education, right? Ban on fracking and all this kind of stuff that runs counter to this. And these are the economic drivers of the country. When will they start standing up and actually exercising that power? Take that and think about the way that politics has been cultivated, right? To hate, you know, the conservative, the red America, blah, blah, blah kind of thing, to hate New York and hate California, right? That basically reinforces some dividing lines. It gets very dangerous.
And also, people really don't realize this, but once, like, California or once New York State start implementing regulations in that state, they ultimately change the way that industry is driven across the country because of how much of the market share those that's like when California imposes strict car regulations or strict gas mileage regulations, that forces auto companies to adhere to that across the board because of how much of a market share California owns and because of how much of a market share New York State owns.
Exactly.
You know, like, they, on a statewide state issue, I mean, like, this was in our show notes and all, but like, they could start doing those power play politics where they control so much of the population where any regulation they do can ultimately have a trickle down effect across the rest of the country.
Exactly. And, you know, so here's this has kind of got me thinking about it again, too, as well. It's like after Trump did the exit from Paris, the Paris Agreement. Right. And again, we should say, right, I mean, first of all, the Paris Agreement was, you know, if you talk to any climate activist, it's non-binding to begin with. It was not a treaty, right? They're saying we are not going to voluntarily participate in this thing any longer, right? But there are obviously real consequences for the planet since we are what we produce, what, 25% of the world's CO2 emissions or something like this, and are only a fraction of the population.
And plus historical carbon emissions that we are responsible for from the Industrial Revolution all the way up and through the 19, you know, up until China or India start producing their thing. You know, one of the arguments I hear from some of the conservatives that come in at the bartend on is like, oh, well, you know, China and India are producing more carbon dioxide than we do, so why should we care? And it's like, you know, a carbon dioxide molecule will stay in the atmosphere for 200 to 400 years. You know, the stuff that we started burning in the beginning of the Industrial Revolution is still in the atmosphere,
right?
And we are responsible for the net carbon that's up there. You know, yeah, it is rough redistribution because, you know what, we plundered, you know, we're plundering continents. We're plundering a continent like Africa for their natural resources. You know, we're plundering our environments, you know, for finite resources. And yet we're still responsible. We're still overwhelmingly responsible for the amount of carbon dioxide that's in the atmosphere because of how long CO2 stays in the atmosphere, the life it has, the residency it has in the atmosphere, and all that CO2 that dates back into the, you know, the Industrial Revolution 200 years ago. We are responsible for that. You know, China and India are just like new players on the map.
No, right. And look, despite that fact, China has put in this huge investment in renewables, right? I mean, they're going like bonkers on solar. And again, this goes back to the point you made at the get-go, is that, you know, they're basically going to end up controlling that whole energy sector in terms of production and economically, because they're making those investments while we're sticking our heads in the sand.
And we're going to lose out on
example
jobs.
Of basically, this is a classic example of kind of like, you know, you climb up the dirty ladder, you get to the roof and you pull the ladder up after you. I mean, that's what the kind of Trump administration has wanted to do.
Yeah. And all of this because of that America first, you know, isolationist, you know, yeah, we're isolating ourselves. You know, I believe in isolationism when it comes towards military intervention, but, you know, when it comes to a globalized economy, isolating yourself from the rest of the world is, you know, becoming a pariah is not something you want to do. It's not a good thing.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, I wanted to come back to this. This is one of the things that so it got me thinking about this kind of power politics stuff is Naomi Klein just had a piece that she wrote just ahead of the Trump pullout was in The Intercept. And she was talking about kind of where do we go from here. So let me just read a little bit of what she had to say. I want to comment on it. So she says, a year ago, the suggestion that the U.S. should face tangible punishment for putting the rest of the humanity at risk was laughed off in establishment circles. Surely no one would put their trade relationships in danger for anything so frivolous as a living, livable planet. But just this week, Martin Wolf, writing in the Financial Times, not exactly your, you know, left-wing liberal publication, right, he declared, quote, if the U.S. withdrew from the Paris Accord, the rest of the world must consider sanctions, unquote. And then she says, we're likely a long way from major U.S. trading partners taking that kind of step, but governments are not the only ones that can impose economic penalties for lethal and immoral behavior. Movements can do so directly in the form of boycotts and divestment campaigns targeting governments and corporations on the South African model. And it's not just fossil fuel corporations, but Trump's branded empire as well. Moral suasion doesn't work on Trump. Economic pressure just might. And she ends with, it's time for some people's sanctions. So let me tease that out a little bit. So one of the things that I think is interesting about this is it works on the same kind of model. Obviously, she even mentioned here the South Africa idea about divestments and boycotts. But it goes to the point that you're making before about, you know, New York and California have disproportionate impacts on the rest of the country, just in terms of the sheer market share. So if you look on the negative side of it, you flip that around a little bit. One of the reasons that people would say, for example, target McDonald's, right, or Nike,
or Walmart.
Or Walmart, right, is not because they are the only corporations that have bad behavior in relationship to food, in relation to sweatshop labor, right, and poor wages, but because they were industry leaders, right? And if you change that, if you change their practices, you are forced to have an impact around there. So, for example, in McDonald's, when basically they convinced McDonald's to switch to kind of, you know, non-factory farming chicken, right, although let's say non-worst factory farming chicken, right? Let's put it that way, because they're not like organic free-range hens anymore. But when McDonald's shifted to that, right, they basically required all their suppliers to actually, you know, meet these particular codes of production. The whole industry had to change. The same thing. We have an opportunity to happen here within New York and California, right, and some other areas. It's kind of like a reverse of that, right? It's saying, what would happen if you start actively pushing forward policies, right, from the kind of those power centers that are going to have that disproportional impact as a way of pushing back, right? Couple that where, you know, I'm actually thinking about active campaigns by social movements to pressure people in New York and California and other key states, right, to act in coalition, right, to shift our economy in other ways, right, to actually could use that power to change the direction that we're at and resist the Trump agenda.
Almost set up your own free trade pact within countries within the United States.
Well, exactly,
within
right?
States within, like you set up your BRICS with, you know, Russia and the Latin American and the Chinese, like your BRICS country, Brazil, Russia, you know, and everything else.
Yep, you exactly. You can do a tremendous amount, but I'm thinking right now we really have to be at the point where like our movements, especially in the face of this stuff on climate change. I mean, you and I have talked about this before. I mean, I look at climate change as probably the number one issue that's out there right now, right? And I'm not saying that like all these other things are irrelevant. What I'm saying is that we're talking about our freaking planet. Right. And I'm thinking, you know, Naomi Klein, you know, and this changes everything in that book. I mean, she makes the case in that book, which I'm like 100% behind her approach to that, is saying this is not, we have an opportunity because we're at the point of crisis at this point. We have an opportunity also to remake our economy and our social relations. Right. That's what we have to be.
Like, we can go to Mars, for. You know,
what's that?
We can go to Mars, you know.
Well, we can. And we're going to, man. We're gonna, and I'm not entirely opposed to that. I'm very conflicted about that because I have two different kind of like voices in my head about what that is. But I, you know, I look at that and I think, you know, and she uses that word muscular movement that comes from Naomi Klein when she's talking about, you know, we've had movements that are very good about saying no. We've had movements that are very good about kind of protesting and outrage. But what we haven't seen is that a concerted effort to establish an agenda, right? A collaborative agenda about what our points are, what our vision of the future is, and kind of moving that forward. But I think this is exactly the same reason why we see this kind of renewed interest, especially by young folks, right, in socialism and kind of alternative economies and things like this, because that is a positive vision. This is also what Bernie Sanders brought to the plate during the last presidential campaign, right? A vision of what it looks like to kind of live in this world, a different kind of world, different sets of possibilities. And I remember back when, you know, back in the global justice movement, the 1999, 2000, early 2000s, right, that was going like crazy until, of course, 9/11. That was one of the most important contributions or successes of that movement, is they started building an alternative global structure for deliberating what that new world is possible, right? What does a new future look like, right? The alternatives are possible. So, you know, I think that's kind of the place that we need to be at right now. Climate change offers one way of thinking about that, right? Of bringing that under thing, or at least bringing it to crisis, I would say. And frankly, what's been the kind of responses that people have had, the mass movements and stuff are really awesome. But I mean, I think we got to kind of dig in on this one and start thinking about some ways to cause political pain, right? For the people who are destroying our lives.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, it's crazy. So let's use that as we're talking about the Trump thing. I do want to talk, maybe we'll save this for the second part, but you know, I want to talk about what happened in Portland and with the white supremacist stuff. But let me kind of move first before we get to that. I want to talk about the March for Truth stuff, right? Because this is like another one of these marches that been organized in resistance to Trump, happening across the country, more than 100 cities across the country, right out in Harrisburg. Obviously, you were going to be one of the featured speakers out there. And calling for kind of independent investigations of the Trump and his campaign in terms of the Russia, the Russia investigations. So, what number one, what's your take on this movement and the directions of this? And, you know, so what are you going to be doing specifically on like in Harrisburg? I mean, I thought it was pretty cool that you're going to be out there kind of talking to folks.
Yeah, it's obviously they're going to try, the March for Truth is trying to get people to bring attention to Russia and Trump's ties to Russia. I think that, in my opinion, yes, it is a big deal. Yeah. I don't think that there are conspiracy theories behind it. I think that, especially with just, the financial implications that, you know, people in Trump's cabinet have with Russia. I mean, you just start off with Rex Tillerson, you know, the former CEO of Exxon, and having a, 50% partnership with Rosneft, Russia's state-owned oil company, in order to create the largest oil conglomerate in the world. You know, like, that right there is just a glaring red flag. You know, there's a lot of stuff that there's all that. And then, I think we should definitely keep an eye on the Russia, but not be totally distracted on it. You know, like the shiny red object over here, so we don't get keep an eye on like things that are getting passed as you let the administration use as a smokescreen. But, I was approached to speak there last week. One of the organizers asked me to speak there from the local Indivisible group and asked me to speak on the attacks on the media that's been happening. And it's really exciting. It's something that talked about this before, you know, back in October, kind of like fell by the wayside, right? And, you know, didn't do much for a couple months, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And now since the election, you know, like that AppScuff action, you know, really just renewed my interest in writing again, like more consistently. And, you know, since the election, we've kind of become a leader within the progressive movement, but, you know, it's also, we also have been building power too.
That's what I hope. I mean, this has been the long-term goal is that, you know, this kind of media outlet is, I think, what we need. I mean, it's obviously, you know, when I say that, I don't mean that, you know, Raging Chicken Press by itself will solve everybody's problems. That's not it. What I mean is that we need a kind of like a grassroots, homegrown, progressive media infrastructure in the state. I mean, you know, I worked with, you know, you have too as well, with Rick Smith for years now. And this is kind of one of our mantras is that we have left, and this is on all of our backs. And when I mean our, I mean kind of progressives, activists, like liberals, even for that matter, have left that media infrastructure go by the wayside, right? We have not built our institutions. And, you know, Raging Chicken Press, when we started in 2011, that was the primary goal, is to begin building that infrastructure and recognizing, look, it's going to take a long time. But, you know, I think we've been pretty good about kind of keeping our nose to the grindstone and focusing on it where it needs to be focused, focusing on, you know, social movements, focus on what people are doing in the streets, like pushing back, holding power accountable, and so on. And with the big move, as we, you know, we talked about in the onset too, as well, is like, you know, after the election, you know, I gave up some other projects that I was working on and said, that's it. I gotta go. It's now or never. Go all in with Raging Chicken, begin paying our writers and so on. Right. And now we've got these, you know, membership campaigns. We're, you know, like one third way towards our goal of being able to pay all of our writers even more. You know, so become a member, RagingChickenPress.org, click on the support membership tab. But you're right, Sean. I mean, I think that, you know, we built up that, and I, you know, I'll talk about this in the second segment a little bit. I was at Tuesday with Toomey out in Allentown this past week. And, you know, there are people I never met before. And when they saw a Raging Chicken Press hat, people were coming up to me and say, you know, you guys are the only ones that are covering what we're doing, right? You got the best coverage in the state. And I tell everybody this, we have the best coverage in the state about Tuesday with Toomey, and the Indivisible Movement is coming from Raging Chicken Press. And, you know, my response was like, that's great to hear, but I'm telling you right now, we can do so much more, right? If we continue to get the support we can do so much more. But so, man, it's going to be awesome that you're going to be out there. I wish you'd be out there on Saturday too as well.
It's you know, like, I've never been the best public speaker. You know, the past, I guess, doing the podcast, working with Rick and having a microphone in front of my face, I've gotten a lot used to it. You know, this past year, I've been asked a couple times to speak at some of the Tuesday with Toomey events, like 40, 50, 60 people. This will definitely be the largest event, you know, even if it's like 100 or 200 or like, you know, maybe three or four I'll ever speak in front. I've spoken in front of to this point. And, you know, it's exciting, you know,
yeah, it is.
But it's also it's exciting to realize that there are people out there who I've never met messaging me on Facebook, asking me to speak at a rally like this. You know, mm-hmm. like that's why I find it's like I've never met some. I'm like the organizer. You know, I never met them at a rally or a protest yet. But you know, there's people within this region who look to us in central Pennsylvania, the stuff we're doing, and you know, we were on the. I was on the top of their list to speak at this rally on Saturday. Which is pretty good, which is pretty awesome. Like, you know, it's just like, it's a way of showing the work we've been doing is starting, it's paying off a little bit.
Yeah, it is. And I think that, you know, again, it's just another example of the fact that, you know, that you're gonna be speaking there, you know, again, you know, be speaking there, or if we're gonna be attending there, we need to have the voices on the ground. And I think that it's even better now that you get to turn around and basically share with other folks, right? And a kind of larger venue or large, like kind of direct venue, kind of what we've learned, right, over these past 6 years with Raging Chicken Press and the kind of things that we need to focus on, and we can actually kind of, you know, help other people see too as well. That's, you know, that's what I really hope is going to happen. I'm so glad Rick is going to be out in New York City. He's going to be covering, Rick Smith is going to be covering the March for Truth in New York City. You know, the one thing that I'm really hoping for that comes out of this march is, again, a renewal and emphasis that we need to organize even further. And, you know, in some ways, I think the decision to pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement is going to bolster some people and increase the numbers already. My one concern, right, and I kind of alluded to this a little bit before we went on the air, you know, I look at this and, you know, a lot of the principles behind the March for Truth, it kind of echoes some of the kind of main, you know, Democratic Party talking points around Russia, right? Especially if you watch any MSNBC, I mean, you could see, you know, the Russia, 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 Russia focus. I do not think that's what organizers have in mind for this. If you look at the supporting organizations that are involved in this, and you could clearly see that, you know, these are people that have been invested in the movement, invested in building resistance. But, you know, I would just caution people in the movement not to allow the Democratic Party to try to basically co-opt people's movements, right? If you want, I will never forget the time that we were sitting on, and I think you were there for this one too as well. We're at a budget rally in Harrisburg when Tom Corbett, the former governor, was proposing huge cuts to education, and especially higher education. And we're out there speaking, and then we had hundreds and hundreds of students that were bussed in, right? Democrats, right? Legislators didn't want anything to do with this thing. But when they saw the people out there and all the cameras, then you got these Democratic Party representatives in the state who start showing up and want to speak and want to get their mug out in front of their, like they did something. And they didn't do crap to organize that thing ahead of time. Yet they show up and they want their face in front of it and somehow claim it as the mantle of the Democratic Party when they were just as bad as anyone else beforehand.
And then you have Todd Stevens from Horsham.
Oh yeah.
then you have Todd Stevens come up and says, yeah, well, you know, we got to tighten our belt and you're going to get some cuts.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, at least he was like direct about it. Right. We had some other Republican, like new Republican conservatives who got up there and spoke to as well. And gave this like mirror, like, or like smoke and mirrors language about, you know, budgeting, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, again, I think that part of what it means to build a movement is to basically control the message. Right, and be as together in saying that, no, this is our movement, right? If Democrats want to get behind it, right, then go for it. We will push that party. But this is not the Democratic Party's movement, right? Democrats may be involved in this, but it should be more than this, right? And what I hear from organizers of the March for Truth is people basically saying that this is dangerous. What we see, the connections with Russia, especially after this past week, Russia basically, like, I'm not Russia, Trump basically excuses a whole bunch more of his White House staff from ethics rules, right? I mean, this is just, it's getting worse and worse. So this is totally appropriate. I just worry that, you know, you've got, you know, the DNC nationally and even statewide parties looking to co-opt this stuff and just kind of make it and tame it down. I don't think we can afford to tame things down at this point. I think we need to start ramping things up and making demands. So my two cents on it. You know, I wish I could be there in Harrisburg for this on Saturday, but I've got a whole bunch of kid obligations on Saturday, so I'll be out there. I'll be there in spirit, Sean. I'm looking to see, hopefully somebody's going to have some video out there for you.
Yeah.
Crazy. One thing I want to mention before we go to break, and maybe we'll talk more about this next week. I don't want to kind of go on forever here. But, you know, again, there was just these things that I alluded to at the onset, you know, right after we got off the air last week and got finished publishing it, is when that horrific attack took place in Portland, Oregon, where you had the white supremacist dude, Jeremy Joseph Christian, basically killed two men. And seriously wounded another, because that Christian guy was out there. He was berating these two women that were on this train, the MAX train in Oregon, in Portland, Oregon, and making all
sorts of Arabic or Muslim women.
Well, one of them. What were they? Both Muslim women. I know one had a hijab. The other one was an African American woman. I don't know if she was Muslim too as well. I just don't know. I could be wrong.
Don't know. I think, but at least like one of them was Muslim, I believe.
Making all a hijab. Yeah. And so I was, you know, they're making all sorts of racist comments that are, and these guys stood up and said, stop it. Right. We're not going to tolerate this.
And it makes you wonder, how would you respond in that situation? Right. Like,
I mean, I would
instinctually, I would do the same thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like I would instinctually, it wouldn't be a thought. It would be an instinct. I wouldn't sit back and allow someone to start berating two women over, especially over being a racist to them, to their face.
No, exactly. And I think that, you know, I think, from accounts of what happened, I mean, one guy was involved with anti-racist stuff. You know, he was an activist, but the other ones, I think they saw what was going on and we're not going to say, no, come on, we don't do this. And this guy, you know, flipped a nut and, you know, went and started stabbing him. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But, you know, I mean, I think we need to see this. And I worry once again that this gets seen as some sort of, you know, this is just one extreme example. But, what I was alluding to again at the onset was that, you know, there was this other guy out in California, I guess, who basically got beat up or got his nose broken or bloodied or something like this at that violent kind of Berkeley clash. Right. And it turns out that there's these groups, right, these free speech warriors that are actively going around and traveling and looking for places to cause trouble and seeking out some of these Antifa conflicts.
Yeah.
Right. And they're looking to get into these physical and violent.
And now they're gearing up with like shields and sticks, you know, like it's almost like we're seeing Gangs of New York type stuff that they're trying to provoke. And yes, I know people involved with the Antifa movement out here in Harrisburg. I know people who've gotten clashes with the Antifa movement out here in Harrisburg. And yeah, you know, it happens. It's I don't condone it, but like when you stick your head in the sand, you know, there's a KKK right. rally or there's the nooses going up around the Washington Monument. You know, you stick your head in the sand and say, well, if we ignore it, it'll go away and it'll be fine. You're opening yourself up one to those type of clashes between the Antifa and the racist skinheads. But, you know, if you stick your head in the sand, you're allowing them to propagate themselves, to multiply and expand. You know, it won't happen here. These are just a bunch of distasteful youth, you know. Like, oh, these like, you know, 1920s Germany, oh, these young Nazis don't know what they're doing. They're just a bunch of like disaffected youth who don't know anything about politics and they're never going to be important. Well, guess what happened 10 years later?
No, exactly. And I think that, you know, this is why the dude, I'm just going to forget his name. It was the journalist who wrote that thing down in Philly.
Brian Hickey.
Why that got under my skin so much, right? And why I keep on thinking about that is like, you know, a lot of these people that they want you to ignore things until they'll go away. Don't, you know, don't engage and all this kind of stuff, or basically saying you're blowing things out of proportion. I bet you some of those things are probably some of those very people have that quote by, you know, the Martin Niemöller, right? You know, he was a Protestant pastor, basically has a famous one. You know, first they came for the socialists and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists and I did not speak out because I was a trade unionist. That kind of thing, right? I mean, if we were to remember that, right, the reason why that quote has had such staying power is it's getting to people to kind of say, okay, wait a minute, you know, how do I act in this world? Like, how do I respond? Do I only respond when it comes to my doorstep, or do I step forward and not allow this to happen further? And I think that why the Portland train attack is so troubling to me, right? Beyond the immediate facts of the case, is because that's how emboldened these people are right now, because we have let them go. We have let them self-organize on their own, and we've ignored them, and we thought about it. Well, yeah, there's some people that are out there on the fringe, and they're showing that they're not just out there on the fringe, that they are feeling emboldened to the point that they will freaking knife attack, right, at first challenge. That is not a good scenario.
Yeah, no. And it's like, you know, doing the thing we're doing out here, it's like I'm not afraid of the politicians coming out, you know. I'm not afraid of the blood sport that politics is in Philadelphia, you know, just not existing out here. I'm afraid of some, you know, local skinhead figuring out like what we're doing. Like, you know what I mean? I'm more worried about that than like, you know, some politician trying to take the camera out of my hand, you know, because there's repercussions for that. There's, you know, like with a skinhead trying to figure out, like, you know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, it makes you wonder.
No, exactly. And, you know, so before we go to break, I want to kind of touch on this and I'll close this segment for now, but we're going to have to come back to it and say, well, you know, how do we respond? But I don't know if you caught this, but this guy, Timothy Snyder, was interviewed. He's on the Majority Report this week, talking about his new book on tyranny. And it's On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century. And it was a really fascinating discussion. It's a guy who's, you know, he's a European historian, but he's basically been making a name for himself as kind of a public intellectual, basically saying we want to draw, you know, implications from some historical study. And he studied fascist movements, the rise of fascist movements, or extremist movements of that, and both on the right and the left, right, primarily in Europe. But he put together this very short book called On Tyranny. And it's got these 20 lessons. Each lesson is like, you know, it's this little book. Each lesson is like maybe 3-4 pages or something like this. And he said, this is the thing that got me about it. He said on that interview, and I have the book now, the first lesson is the whole thing. If you don't abide by the first lesson, all the rest, you might as well just throw the rest away. And the lesson was this, right? It basically was saying, do not obey in advance. Right? Lesson number one. I just want to read a little bit of this. He says, most of the power of authoritarianism is freely given. in times like these, individuals think ahead about what a more repressive government In times like these, individuals think ahead about what a more repressive government will want and then offer themselves without being asked. A citizen who adapts in this way is teaching power what it can do. Anticipatory obedience is a political tragedy. Perhaps rulers did not initially know that citizens were willing to compromise this value or that principle. Perhaps a new regime did not at first have the direct means of influencing citizens in one way or another. After the German elections of 1932, which permitted Hitler to form a government, or the Czechoslovak elections of 1946, where communists were victorious, the next crucial step was anticipatory obedience. Because enough people in both cases voluntarily extended their services to the new leaders, Nazis and communists alike realized that they could move quickly toward a full regime change. The first heedless acts of conformity could not then be reversed. Right. And his whole principle is the idea that if you basically say, okay, well, maybe just like we heard these discussions when Trump first got elected, well, maybe we're going to work a little bit with him and hope that he'll turn around and things like this. He said no. And the Snyder was basically saying, he's like, you know, this is why the calls of say, this is not normal, this is not normal, this is not normal, I will not give my consent, are so absolutely critical. And I think that, again, the same kind of principle is at work right across the board right now. But I think it speaks especially loudly when we see the kind of racist attacks that that continue. The idea that we're going to put posters or flyers up on college campuses promoting kind of neo-fascist organizations with hate speech or, you know, hate messages all in them, that we're going to kind of let comments go by from these kind of like, quote unquote, free speech warriors or neo-fascists. We can't do it. So kind of it's a good read. Timothy Snyder's On Tyranny. Anyways, go ahead. Sorry.
Before we go to the break, you know, I actually had a really good discussion with, you know, someone who works in one of the Capital Media Services groups, the organization, like Capital Media Service within the Capital. And we were talking about, you know, fairly smart person, never really got to talk to him politically, just see him passing. And, you know, we sparked like a quick 5-minute conversation. I was hanging out with Roxbury and, you know, he brought the subject. This is Weimar Germany. And, you know, it's like he told me about this book that was published in the 1970s from a philosopher. I forget the name of the book, forget who the author was, but he's a friend of Ayn Rand and pretty much like, you know, was a contrarian to Ayn Rand, but yep. Was still like friendly with her. And, you know, I asked him, did you ever hear of Chris Hedges? And he's like, no. And I explained to him he was a foreign war correspondent in the Iraq war. He was, you know, for New York Times, foreign war editor. The foreign correspondent editor at the New York Times, he's watched all these regime falls. And, you know, he's been writing about us being Weimar Germany for the past 10 or 15 years now. And I'm like, you know, people on the left have called Hedges an alarmist because the way he frames things. But I mean, what he's been writing about, you know, it's that type of like, that type of, you know, thinking. It's like, we are Weimar Germany. You know, if we become obedient, we will become Weimar Germany, pretty much.
Right. And you've got to remember that obedient is not simply just doing what you're told, right? It's allowing things to happen, right? It's basically not showing resistance. And this is the part that, you know, again, you see some of this in the liberal media. You see some of this even among kind of like liberals in general, when they see, you know, weekly protests, right? Take the Tuesdays with Toomey stuff, for example. People are out every Tuesday and all this, and they basically say, you know, why are these people out there, right? They're not going to change Toomey's mind. You're not going to change, you know, this Republican's mind. You're not going to change it. The activists that I spoke to at Tuesday with Toomey wouldn't even say that they think that Toomey's going to change his mind. The idea is that you always have to withdraw your consent and make it clear and public that we do not give consent. That alone is a worthwhile move in my mind. But crazy. All right, we need to take a break. I didn't think this was going to go as long today, but here we go again, right? All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We want to remind you, look, if you can, become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Click on the support membership tab at ragingchickenpress.org. Click on become a member. You'll be on your way, or make us a one-time donation there by clicking donate. We'll be back right in just in a couple minutes, and we're going to get into some stuff in Pennsylvania, and then we'll have a closer of kind of fun stuff at the end. Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1952. That was the day 650,000 steel workers walked off the job in an industry-wide strike. The Supreme Court had just handed down a 6-3 ruling in the case of Youngstown Sheet and Tube versus Sawyer. The court decided that the president had no authority to seize private property on the grounds of national security without prior authorization from Congress. On April 8th, President Harry Truman had issued Executive Order 10340, ordering Commerce Secretary Charles Sawyer to seize the nation's steel mills to ensure the continued production of steel, ostensibly for the war effort. Seizure of the mills came after months of wrangling over wage increases and work rules between mill owners, the United Steelworkers, and the Wage Stabilization Board. Steelworkers walked out just hours after the decision. The impact was felt immediately. Layoffs began at a number of steel-dependent industries. By the end of the month, most defense industries and auto plants nationwide were completely shut down. Consumer inventories of steel were almost totally depleted, and exports ceased entirely. The union's ultimate goal was a master contract and the union shop. They hoped to jumpstart negotiations by signing with smaller companies first and forestall invoking of Taft-Hartley. By July, the railroads began to suffer financial losses, as did California growers who lacked tin to can their crops. After 53 days, mill owners and the union agreed to terms that were less than the Wage Stabilization Board had recommended, far less than what the union had originally demanded, but much more than what the mill owners had been willing to concede. More importantly, after 15 years of struggle, the United Steelworkers had finally won the union shop.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. So, Sean, good old moderate, media savvy moderate and champion of the moderates of the Republicans, Charlie Dent, seems to maybe showed his not so moderate clothes this week.
You mean he all but denies the fact that the reporter from The Guardian, Ben Jacobs, was assaulted?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would be it.
I mean, we only have the audio. We don't have any visual evidence, so I guess it didn't happen, you know. Like,
I mean, you know, he says that he's basically, yeah, we're going to welcome him in, open arms, come on in, right? We don't know all the facts. Who knows what could have happened there, right?
We only have the audio. We don't have any visuals.
Yeah, and of course, well, you know, when, you know, Charlie Dent's remarks came out and things like this, it was a media storm about them, right?
You hear that? I think I hear crickets.
Exactly.
I think it was washed up in Texas's Governor Greg or Abbott, whatever, making jokes about shooting a journalist when he was showing his target practice.
No, exactly. So, I mean, this is one thing that you brought up. This story from Dent basically didn't, like, nobody's talking about it.
Yeah, I was actually really surprised no one talked about this because Dent has been billed as the moderate. You know, people think he's a moderate. You know, he's sane, he's level-headed, he spoke in front of the Pennsylvania Press Club. You know, he, you know, said we have more influence than the Tea Party out here in the Tuesday group, you know, the group of moderate Republicans, because there's simply more of us than the Freedom Caucus. And then what does he do? He turns around pretty much all out but denies the fact that a newly elected Congressman Greg Janfort chokeslammed a reporter from The Guardian. I mean, like that's what I looked at. I didn't see it like him like taking sides on it. No, this was an absolute denial that something happened. He said there's audio, but we don't have any visual, so I can't make a judgment on this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else you need. You know, even the fact when you have Janfort comes out and says and apologizes, I mean, even the guy, the candidate, or the, you know, he's newly elected at that point, comes out and kind of apologizes for what he did. You know, he doesn't describe explicitly what happened, but then
even after that liberal media, that biased liberal journalist.
Yep, exactly. I mean, this is This is bad stuff. And this is one thing that we've been saying on this program for a while, is that, you know, Charlie Dent has been getting all sorts of kudos for being this moderate leader and reasonable guy and all this kind of stuff. And look, he's not off the rails, right? Let's be clear. The guy is not off the rails. He's not one of the kind of nut job people out there. But this is a well-known, like, conservative guy, right, that was considered on the right wing before the Tea Party crazy got let loose. So let's, you know, this is kind of where we are in our politics right now. And before we see any champion of these kind of, like, you know, right wing folks to try to looking for, see, even the Republicans are doing it too as well. Maybe that's a little bit of, like, not where we should be putting our attention to, because, you know, Charlie Dent just showed his colors a little bit here, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy, man. So
that was,
hey,
just like one thing that got up under my crawl.
Yeah, I'll say. So, you know, again, in addition to the March for Truth in Harrisburg on Saturday, tomorrow, actually, we've got some budget rallies coming up on Monday, right? And you're going to be there for those, right?
Yeah. There's going to be, I guess, the budget, the people's budget, people first budget is the name of the rally. It's coming up. You know, there's going to be some actions inside the Capitol. Also, there's going to be some actions outside of the Pennsylvania Manufacturer Association building, which is where the Commonwealth Foundation is located.
Yeah, well, you know,
don't know
what's that.
For those of you who don't know, the Commonwealth Foundation is part of the Koch Brother State Policy Network Group. You know, Koch Brother funded, Koch Brother oriented state policy network groups that push the national Koch brother agenda down onto the state levels. And they have these institutions set up in every state around the country, pretty much.
Oh, absolutely. So there's going to be some, I mean, I think it'd be a good day of action. I mean, so I think it is the way to welcome the legislators back as they get ready to kind of move forward on the budget.
Well, actually they're coming back Sunday night or Sunday evening, mm-hmm. and they're going to be starting to work on pension reforms.
That's right. Yeah. So what's going on? Yeah. What's happening with that?
I'm not too sure what this is about. I know that they're working on pension reform deals for the budget. A lot of that's been hush hush. And also one of the things we have to keep an eye out for is the gaming expansion. You know, if you talk to people like Roxbury, he believes that this gaming expansion, that's going to be happening, might be one of the largest, expansion of online gaming and, cause gambling in Pennsylvania, probably in the country, at this point. And, you know, pretty much from what I heard is that they voted on this bill out of committee without even knowing what's in the bill. So there's a bunch of, you know, there's a bunch of lobbyists from national casinos and representing the casino industries that are pushing this bill. And they pretty much want to get gaming and casinos anywhere and everywhere possible.
I'll tell you, man, these people.
And they're doing this as a way to fill in the budget gaps. Instead of actually taxing, you know, the Marcellus Shale or stuff that will not affect people. You know, I look at tax revenue off of casinos is pretty much it's a regressive tax. You know, mm-hmm. gambling taxes are regressive. You're pretty much like, you know, getting money off the poor people who are going to waste their money at the casinos and use that to fill in the budget gaps without doing anything like raising the PIT or without, you know, going after Marcellus Shale industry and the natural gas industry.
Right. And, you know, I look at this budget rally and, you know, this is not the first time there's been a budget rally. But I think in this context right now, after the Trump election, after we've seen, what, 6-7 years of austerity here in the state, that, you know, the time is now for people to really dig in and dig deep on this. And because, like, you know, look, what's scheduled right now is that there's a disabilities funding rally, right, at 11 a.m. Then you have the PA's Choice Budget Rally. That's what it's called, PA's Choice Budget Rally, from 12 to 1 in the Capitol Rotunda. And they're going to be doing lobbying visits all day long there. But the outside on the Capitol steps, you're going to have the March for Investment in PA Communities, a shale tax rally, a rally to tell corporations to pay their fair share, and a march for working families to raise the minimum wage. I mean, you look at those groups that are going to be there together. I mean, you're talking about a potentially really important fighting force. And I think that, you know, again, I have no idea of the specifics of the planning and things like this. One of the reasons I want to come out there kind of and be there for this rally. because, you know, I think it's about time that Pennsylvania really, really turn up the heat. You know, part of this is obviously personal in the sense that, you know, I work at a state university and I've watched the austerity wreak havoc, right, in our and programs and
let's also,
our faculty and our students.
Mm-hmm. Let's also put it out here about the state system of higher education. In my opinion, Governor Wolf has not done a damn thing to reverse the cuts from Governor Corbett back in 2011. And he's not done a damn thing into getting Chancellor Brogan, who is actively seeking to destroy the Pennsylvania state system of higher education and removing him as chancellor of the state system of higher education.
Hey, I'm with you.
Or forcing him down.
You know, I mean,
I'll tell you this. This is probably one of Governor Wolf's biggest failures besides cozying up to the natural gas industry and letting the natural gas industry run rampant across the state and washing his hands of pushing for a severance tax over the past 2 years. That allowing the destruction of higher education in Pennsylvania is one of the governor's biggest shortfalls in his first term.
Man, I agree, Sean. And like I've said before, you know, anytime I talk to somebody and they say, oh, you know, there's no way that, you know, Wagner will win. It's like I see the same kind of nonsense that people were saying about, like, there's no way that Trump is going to win. People saying that about Wagner, even if Terzai is supposedly going to get into the race. We'll see if that ever happens. But no, look, when you've got, you know, in this case, the big difference being obviously is that Wolf is a sitting governor. But, you know, what have you done for me lately is going to be a huge wet blanket over any of his campaign, because it's not just like, you know, what did you give us, but you made, you know, he came out as the education president, right? You're going to, you know, or not president, governor coming out. He's going to restore kind of like fair funding for education, that you're going to tax the national drillers. That's how you're going to pay for education. Yeah. The whole package here. And then none of those things have followed through on it. Right. And then, you know, again, I talk to people who are on the inside and say, well, Wolf, you know, he's in a bad place and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, what bad place are you in? Right. What's the bad place? The bad place that you're in is what? That you are actually you don't have Democrats or Republicans in the House and Senate. OK, that's fine. But that doesn't mean that you can't get out there and use that bully pulpit and kind of make cases for stuff. That doesn't mean that you can't demand that the Democratic Party in this state actually gets strongly behind, you know, the education funding or the severance tax and so on. There's ways to do politics that are not just about insider politics. There's ways of doing politics that are about pushing things, that are about advocating for an agenda consistently and organizing and making it very, very hard for the other side to keep on with their policies of destroying the public sphere. You know, and part of it, I get the fact that he's inherited, you know, basically, I don't want to say do nothing, but I'm saying an extraordinarily weak state Democratic Party that doesn't really understand what it means to strategize and organize. Again, there's some fantastic statewide representatives, right, and senators that are doing some awesome work, but at the party as a whole is kind of in disarray. They don't know what it means to actually organize. If they did, we wouldn't have so many seats that go unchallenged. Wouldn't have ceded huge sections of Pennsylvania onto the Republican Party because the work was too hard or whatever the heck it is, right? They would have made those kind of investments, but they didn't. But Wolf comes in, and now he seems like, okay, you know, nothing I can do, governor. Meanwhile, we're seeing real people pay the price. And again, that doesn't say that there hasn't been something that he was able to accomplish. I don't mean to suggest that, but on these two issues, exactly as you say, the severance tax issue, right, on the funding for higher education and public education in the state, you know, higher education especially, he's done nothing for. If you look at kind of what's happening down, you know, for the rest of education, it was a little bit more, got to be able to get a little bit more there. But man, where are you, Tom Wolf?
Yeah. And we're heading into election season. I mean, the primary, this year's primaries are already up. We're already a year out from the next year's primaries. And, you know, I would caution not just Scott Wagner to be afraid of. I think that you have to pay attention to Paul Mango, who's running for governor. And he's a Republican, venture capitalist, I believe, within the, like, medical or technology industry out of Pittsburgh. And he is aligning himself with Trump people. His campaign manager is David Urban. David Urban is still rumored to become President Trump's next chief of staff. The person running his campaign finances is Lisa Spicer. She worked for Marco Rubio for the past 2 years in campaign fundraising for Rubio.
Is she connected to the Scott Spicer? Is that the same Spicers?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if she's related to Sean Spicer, but I don't know if it's Spicer. It might be Biker, but David Urban Paul Mango is aligning himself with Trump people. It looks like he's taking that same social media approach to Donald Trump, not speaking to the media and just doing everything on Twitter. You know, yes, Scott Wagner is someone to be afraid of, but keep an eye out for Paul Mango because he might be someone who could possibly win.
Well, you know, I didn't realize that Dave Urban was running his campaign because Dave Urban is, you know, for people who don't know, he was credited with the, you know, Trump's win of Pennsylvania. I mean, he basically engineered the campaign on the ground in Pennsylvania and has been getting lots of national credit, especially in right-wing circles. So the fact that Urban is linked up with this guy, it doesn't bode well if you care about, you know, anything public in Pennsylvania.
Because the one thing, there might be a pissing match between Terzai and Wagner if they both run. And you could see where Urban, you know, or no, Mango just takes advantage of them two fighting each other out and runs a squeaky clean campaign and stays out of that pissing match between the two of them and then becomes the candidate for governor. So he's someone that should definitely watch out. You know, he's going to run that social media, not talk to the media at all, ignore the media, control the media through Twitter, and do that type of campaigning.
Well, crazy. Well, you know, one of the things that, well, let me get your take on this. Let me put it this way. I'm just curious. And again, maybe I'm being too overly concerned about this, but similar to what I was saying about the March for Truth. So I look at this budget rally on Monday, right? And we've had other budget rallies as budget season kicks up. Right. And I know that the specter of the next campaign is coming up, right? Gubernatorial elections in 2018. And as you said, that campaign is going to start kicking into full gear. And I'm, you know, in my view, right. And I can remember, let me put it this way. I spoke on, you know, on the steps of the Capitol multiple times during these budget seasons. And, you know, one of the things that I said in one of those speeches, right, is I think that we need to be out here. We need to be loud, but we need to be prepared to come back and bring our sleeping bags, right? That idea that we need to be able to come out and occupy this Capitol and put so much pressure upon these people to do this thing. And, you know, I had to say that even I thought there was more movements in that direction, but then I watched some other rallies when I saw leaders, either labor leaders or political leaders, when you had the kind of activists that wanted to do, you know, something more aggressive, kind of more civil disobedience. They were shooed away from that. They were kind of completely dissuaded for this. And so I'm going to be watching on Monday, I guess, for what's going to be that balance between people coming forward and making arguments for the media versus people that are there to kind of build power and kind of gain power in the state capitol. You know, I that's going to be interesting for me to see how that plays out to gauge what things are like here on the ground in Pennsylvania in terms of a fight back.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because I know like it's not going to be anything too radical with some of the sponsors organizing this rally.
Right.
Some of the like the unions, probably SEIU is involved with it. And yeah, they don't want to push those things. If we're going to see radical civil disobedience coming in, it'll be through those Democracy Spring, March on Harrisburg type of actions. I just don't think that our institutions are up for that yet.
No, I think you're right. I mean, that's kind of my gut on that. I don't think that we're there. And it's an absolute shame in some ways that this, you know, the years of organizing have not happened, right? And I'm talking deep organizing, not just getting people out to lobby. I'm not saying that's not important. It is. But the kind of deep organizing has not been there. And because this, frankly, is one of, in my mind, this is your opportunity, right? Everything is ripe. There's been organizing that's been happening across the state and nationwide in response to Trump, right? You've got a right-wing legislator, a legislature here in the state that is all set to kind of like shoot down anything Governor Wolf that will put forward that is potentially progressive. that's going to help people out. And we should be pushing back harder than this. But as you said, I don't think our resistance institutions are there yet. Well, we'll see. I mean, maybe it's going to take the next election cycle to get people really up and doing that kind of direct action out there in the Capitol.
Well, if we're relying on that next election cycle, these institutions won't be around.
Well, I mean, like 2018, you know what I'm saying? I mean, not the presidential one. I mean, 28. I mean, you know, again,
no, I'm talking about. Yeah.
No, I mean,
if we're relying on.
No. No, you're right. I get exactly what you're saying. If we're relying on what's going to happen after that, all I'm meaning is, like, you know, people seem to pay it more attention when there's an election. And given the fact that the campaign season is going to be kicking off, that maybe that's going to get people more actively involved, think about pushing back. But, you know, things like the budget, things like policy stuff, is that a lot of
potential
people
Governor Wagner.
God, can you imagine? It's going to be crazy. I hope we don't get to that point. I hope we don't get to the point where we have Governor Wagner. If we have Governor Wagner, then, okay, you know, it's going to be a little too late.
Your institutions are done.
Right. Yeah, your institutions are done. I think that right now is the time that, you know, the left in the broadest sense possible needs to be fighting back, and fighting back in more militant ways than before. Not like, you know, hoping for the best or just relying upon the insider strategy that is so often the case in Pennsylvania, for especially established organizations like unions and for Democratic Party. We need to kind of kick it up a notch, but it's crazy. Oh, Sean. So it'll be good to be out there in Harrisburg on Monday. I hope folks will kind of come by, kind of say hi. I talked about why you're out there and so on. See if you're kind of out there, up there to push the limits too as well. But anything else going on out there in Harrisburg right now?
Nothing much. Just some beautiful weather right now.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in the last segment. Talk about the beautiful weather and what it's doing for our spirits. all right. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be right back after this to close things out for on this yet another beautiful day for a change in Pennsylvania. We'll be right back. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 5 years, we've brought unapologetic progressive activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive citizen media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new sustainable models of journalism. And frankly, no one's going to do it for us. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a good beer or a cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support, and keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. So here we are, the beginning of June, without a, you know, a head of FEMA, the NOAA. Thank goodness, at least it's starting out, at least where I'm sitting right
we're
now.
We're not in hurricane camp.
Yeah, right, exactly. That we're actually having some good weather right now, and that we're not kind of going to be drowned out yet. But so there is some good weather out there, and it is a good weekend to kick off Philly Beer Week, folks. That's going to be a big deal. Are you going to get down for any of it, Sean?
I don't know. I don't think I'm going to be able to make it down for anything in particular. But Pizza Boy's having a really good event tomorrow at Brew, which is down in Center City, Philadelphia. I think it's during the afternoon. There was no time. There's a set time for it, but the website I checked. I didn't give a time listed, but it's called It's Always Sunny Side Up in Philadelphia. And it's going to be a tap takeover with Sunny Side Up on tap, our like world famous coffee stout. If you haven't had that beer, it's probably one of the best coffee stouts you'll ever have. It's maybe Alesmith Speedway Stout is up there, but between those two beers, it doesn't get any better. And they're going to be having a bunch of, they're going to have a bunch of firkins on. They're going to have a bunch of firkins on tap. I know one of them is a maple bacon donut sunny side up, where they bought 15 maple bacon donuts from Duck Donuts out here on the West Shore on the Carlisle Pike. And they put them into the firkin with sunny side up. There might be some pepper treatments and some other ones too.
Oh my God. And this is tomorrow?
This is tomorrow in Center City, Philadelphia. No, so you can take a train to get there. It'll probably hurt your wallet a little bit, but it's definitely worth the money if you're near a train line.
Well, here it is. I've actually got the details on it here. It's always sunny set up in Philadelphia, Brew Crafted Wurst, and that is June 3rd from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Right, so that's 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can actually check it out at the. Let me see where I got it. It's always sunny side up in Philadelphia Facebook event. Right, so if you just do, it's always sunny side up in Philadelphia and put that into Facebook. You can go to the event page for details, how to get to Wurst and so on, or how to get to Brew and so on. So that'll be good. I mean, that you just made my mouth water talking about that firkin. I'll tell you that. I mean, that the sunny side up and the sunny side up is, yeah, I would agree, hands down, it's one of the best stouts I've ever had. And then
how'd you like those bourbon cans I gave you?
Oh my God, that's what I was just gonna say. The bourbon stout, man, that was unbelievable. And some of the kind of special, you know, just the special versions that I've had, you know, especially that one, man, is the one that winter one with the spice in it, the cinnamon. Oh my God, it just had me crazy. So, yeah, that was fantastic. So get down there and check it out if you can. And Philly Beer Week's going on all week. There's, you know, it's always tons of events going on. Just look that up at Philly Beer Week. And
also check out some of the Forest and Main stuff that's going on in Philadelphia.
Yeah, they've got quite a bit of stuff going on down there. So that should be awesome. Free Will, of course, from up here in Percocet will be down there. Should be a good event all the way around. But that doesn't bode well, right, for some of the other kind of the positive stuff. So I have to say, Sean and I were talking before we went on about, you know, it's been a while sitting in the funk of the, you know, in the wake of the Trump funk, I guess. But man, this good weather has got both of us out and about, hitting the great outdoors this week, huh, Sean?
Yeah. So, you know, I took someone out this week, went on a date, and, one of the things, we didn't go to the movies or anything like that. We went hiking instead. So there's out here in central Pennsylvania, there's a lot of awesome hiking spots. And we went up to Hawk Rock, which is an outlook right in the Duncannon area. And, you know, there's the Appalachian Trail. You go up this steep mountain. It's a steep climb for like a short mountain. You know, it's like a 45 minute hike up. It's like almost like the Stairmaster from hell at some points. It's just because it's just a vertical. You're just climbing steps pretty much like most of the way up. And then we took an off trail, a non-marked trail, out to this place called Cove Rock. And Cove Rock overlooks the Susquehanna River, right? From Hawk Rock, you can see the Susquehanna River, a part of it, but you're mainly looking at the valley. The Cove Rock, you can see like a nice mountain right in front of you called Cove Mountain. It's on the other side of the Susquehanna. But then you look over to the left, and you can see where the Juniata and the Susquehanna rivers meet. And then, so that was a nice hike. It's like a nice 4 mile hike. And then I've been running more lately. So this morning I got up at like 7 o'clock in the morning,
which is unbelievable.
Got up at 7 o'clock in the morning. Like, I responded to your email you sent me, and you responded right back. I was surprised you were up that early. But
dude, my kids are still in school. I got to get up and make lunches.
So, no, I got up and I ran, went out to the Wildwood Sanctuary, which is like a man-made lake outside on the outskirts of Harrisburg. There's like a 3 mile trail, like concrete trail. Some part of it's gravel because you're right in front of this like man-made lake. But it's a great like bird sanctuary. So we're like egrets and cranes, like all these different type of bird species. While I was out running, I actually came across some chipmunks that were burrowing into the trail, which was pretty cool. And I was able to, I set a personal record. I did like 3.1 miles, a lot of hills, nice flat part in like 37 minutes. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Nice, man. I mean, I have this past weekend, I did a whole bunch. I mean, this whole week has been like this. I did a bunch of gardening. So I used to garden all the time, like
it's
do stuff.
Green thumb.
Well, yeah, I love doing that stuff. And And then, when I lived up in Allentown, I had this fairly small backyard in my row house and things like that. But, you know, anybody would come over, they're like, oh my God. It's like just over the years, I just start doing, you know, different kinds of trees and vines and things like this. And I love doing that kind of stuff. And so the having young kids, the question is like, yeah, I'd love to do that. But that means that, you know, someone's got to watch the kids, right? You know, my wife, you know, works a lot, right? And, you know, you don't want to just dump kids on her when she's got stuff to do too as well. So you have to kind of negotiate that. So I'm going to do as much. But now they're at that age, you know, they're 8 and 5. So they can kind of like do stuff on their own. There's some friends over. So I started the week, you know, I planted blueberry bushes, right, in the side of my house. And you'll appreciate this. I forgot to mention this to you at the top of the show. But nugget hop, Sean. I'm growing.
I saw you did that. I saw you got the enzymes
rhizomes.
The rhizomes for it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I planted so I've got this little tower in my backyard now. And I got four nugget hops rhizomes that I'm gonna grow just kind of for fun. I'm gonna kind of see if there's anybody home brewers that are around in the area that if they turn out okay and they dry out all right, you know, that they're or they want to pick them, they can harvest them themselves.
I know it takes a couple years for them to really grow and get to reach their full potential, but I mean, yeah. Hop plants smell amazing.
Well, that's why I got them. I was like, this one, everyone, and the nugget ones are particularly like, you know, they're that large and juicy, so apparently extraordinarily aromatic.
Yeah, they're really nice. I think there's a place out here called Sealands Grove, mm-hmm. Which is like 45 minutes up. You know, in the middle of central Pennsylvania, and it's sort of like Doylestown, you know, what Doylestown would be like, that, like a liberal oasis in the middle of like central PA, like the heart of central PA.
Where'd this place come from?
Yeah. There's Susquehanna University's up there. It's a college town. There's a place called Sealands Grove Brewery that was like the old city hall or the old mayor's house that was turned into a brewery. And I think out back, they have a trellis set up like a little, and I think they're covered in hop plants. So you can like sit out back and have all that and just really enjoy the good stuff.
Well, and I tell you, that's my goal, right? My goal is I did a small tower this year just to kind of, I want to see, you know, get used to growing and that kind of stuff and see how they come out and see how fast they grow. They're supposed to, I mean, these ones, my towers is not nearly tall enough. These things go like 20, 25 feet. Right. If you let them keep on growing up. But we were out in California, there was one hotel we stayed at, and there was like, they had this little outdoor area, and they had this kind of, it was almost like a half circle, like wicker thing, right, with a little bench inside that my kids loved. And so that's got to be playing in my head. So I've got a spot in my small yard, right, where I could actually potentially do that, like, and set it up. So you just do like a bamboo framing of this kind of big, like half circle thing with like a bench in it, but then plant hops all around it. So the hops would just kind of grow up and over, and you just be like overtaken by them. So it's going to be my experiment for the summer. So that'll be pretty cool.
Nice.
And then,
nice.
Yeah. And now this later this afternoon, actually, once I get this podcast up and stuff, I'm going to go out to the garden center again. And I've got the one side of my house, which is we tore bushes out of there years ago because they were just horrid and there was a bunch of problem. But everything that we put over there, it just hasn't been right for it. But my wife this year has basically said, okay, you can do whatever you want now. Because she always wanted these different things. I'm like, those aren't going to grow very well over there. I'm going to tell you that. And everything dies. So I've got my ideas about what I'm going to do there. And I've got a little tree that I'm going to plant, so that'll be good. But then yesterday, too, was so beautiful. I volunteered the morning. I was outside. It was my kids' field day at school. So I was out volunteering in the morning. I was running the Giant Wizards Elves game, right, which is basically a team rock, paper, scissors game. Right? So that was kind of fun. And then I came home, came home, and then I just got my bike out, said, okay, we're starting it off, and we're going to get this going. So I went out for like a 45-minute bike ride just around in the area. And then this is something I always used to do when I used to ride my bike a lot. You go out for that first bike ride, and you got to make all the little tweaks on your bike. You know, okay, the handle grips, got to move them a little bit, and make sure the chains. Well, I was kind of like doing that. So that was kind of great to be out and about. And I think the greatest way to cap off my day yesterday was that I'm a member of a CSA, a community-supported agriculture place called Blooming Glen Farms right out here. And the place is amazing. I mean, what they've done in a very short period of time at this place is just great. It's all organic stuff and all that. We had our first pickup on Tuesday, So I just kind of spent time yesterday. Yes, I know it's 2 days. It took me 2 days to get to it, but like blanching the kale for it was there, making salad stuff, looking for recipes for, you know, healthy eating over the summer. So that's the direction I'm going to go. Not going to give up the beer fest, not going to give up the beer, that's for sure. You know, that was kind of a good way to inaugurate the summer in some way, Sean.
Yeah.
Crazy, crazy. Well, you got anything else for the good of the order?
Nothing really too much. Enjoy this good weather while it lasts. I mean, it's not even like there was a couple like really humid days after like the rain broke.
Yeah.
We were after Memorial Day weekend, but it is like 0% humidity out here. I actually had to go close my door in a previous segment because the wind was blowing and it was blowing my mail everywhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's like one of the things I love about living off the riverfront in Harrisburg. I could really get away with without turning the air conditioning unit on until like mid-July, late July, because there's always that like breeze coming through right off the riverfront. It's great living off in front of 9 months of the year. And then the wintertime, it just gets brutal.
Right. Well, crazy. Well, man, have an awesome weekend. I'll be following you in spirit, if not online. And hopefully somebody will be streaming the event, the March for Truth out in Harrisburg, where you'll be speaking. Hope that goes awesome. And I will see you on Monday out in Harrisburg for the budget rally. I'll be out there for there. And we'll see everybody else, if not sooner. We'll see you next week right here in Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney. Oh, wait, Sean's got one more thing. Go.
I'll say I'll have to give you a tour of the newsroom, have you meet some of the – show you where all the stuff gets made up in Harrisburg and say, look,
I would love to. I would love to have the face of people's like, there's more of you.
We should bring out a couple of our like younger writers and be like, oh, my God, there's –
it'd be fantastic. Well, I'm hoping I should say that I was going to leave a surprise, but I won't. Because I don't know if it's going to be here in time. That was my goal. So I got you a new Raging Chicken trucker hat. But this one, it's a little bit different style. So you'll have two different ones. So that when you want to let that loose. So right. It's on its way. All right, man. I'll see you on Monday.
All right. I'll see you later.
All right. Good week, everybody. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll talk to you next week.
See ya. We'll